heavy hearted and alone, but we're trusting in the Lord, and according to his word, we will understand it better by and by. By and by, when the morning comes, when the saints of God are gathered home, we will tell the story, how we've overcome. We will understand it better by and by. Temptations, hidden snares, often take us unawares, and our hearts are made to bleed, for a thoughtless word or deed. And we wonder why the test, when we try to do our best, but we'll understand it better by and by. By and by, when the morning comes, when the saints of God are gathered home, we will tell the story, how we've overcome. We will understand it better by and by. By and by, when the morning comes, when the saints of God are gathered home, we will tell the story, how we've overcome. We will understand it better by and by.
All right. Well, when June asked me to speak today, I thought, wow, we're on the C team, possibly even the D team. So I'm not going to claim to bring a message, but I will bring some thoughts on manna. So we're going to begin in Revelation 2:17, just the first part of that verse. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I will give some of the hidden manna to eat. Now, these words are addressed to the church in Pergamos, and that church dwelt within a wealthy and wicked city, surrounded by temples and lots of symbols of pagan worship. So the saints in Pergamos were surrounded on all sides by worldviews at odds with the simplicity and all-sufficiency of the gospel. And although the church at Pergamos is not, certainly not the church in Revelation that we seek to align ourselves with, I think we can say that, like that church, we often find ourselves doing battle with what the world tells us about who we are and what is right, best, and just for our lives, and what we should be striving for. So when I was reading in Revelation and thinking about the Church of Pergamos, I was reflecting on how I myself have been in a season of time where I've been kind of negotiating a tension between what the world tells me and what might be God's best for my life. So specifically, I've been wrestling with what my employer wants me to do and what seems like a good idea from a career standpoint. And again, how that might compare or contrast with what God's best for me might be. So like the church in Pergamos, I'm wrestling a bit with the world's logic and values and systems of rewards. God says to the Pergamos church in verse 12, I know where you live, where Satan has his throne. So he likewise knows where we are living right now and the difficulties we face, and he has made provision for us to be overcomers. It's much easier to consume, at least for me, the visible manna of the world. It's easy to get. Just go through a drive-thru anytime you want, and it often tastes better, right? But being overcomers involves looking past the visible, or what the world provides for us, to the hidden provision, the hidden manna, which only God provides to us through Jesus Christ. So today I want to just bring a few thoughts, not even a fully formed message, about manna, which is something that's been on my mind a lot lately. So manna was provided as physical sustenance for the children of Israel. So I want to go now to Exodus 16, and I'll read a lengthy portion because it takes up a lot of time. Okay, no. Read a lengthy portion. So Exodus 16, and this is very familiar, and I have to say that I just finished reading Exodus, and I painfully identify with the children of Israel sometimes. So, we'll start in verse 3, and the children of Israel said to them, "Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat and when we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." It's kind of how the kids talk to me when I'm late delivering dinner to them. No. "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. And it shall be on the sixth day that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily.' Then Moses and Aaron said to all the children of Israel, 'At evening you shall know that the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt, and in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your complaints against the Lord. But what are we that you complain against us?' Also Moses said, 'This shall be seen when the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening, and in the morning bread to the full. For the Lord hears your complaints which you make against him. And what are we? Your complaints are not against us, but against the Lord.' Then Moses spoke to Aaron, 'Say to all the congregation of the children of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your complaints.' Now it came to pass, as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the children of Israel, that they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in a cloud. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'I have heard the complaints of the children of Israel. Speak to them, saying, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God.' So it was that quail came up at evening and covered the camp, and in the morning the dew lay all around the camp. And when the layer of dew lifted, there on the surface of the wilderness was a small round substance, as fine as frost on the ground. So when the children of Israel saw it, they said to one another, 'What is it?' For they did not know what it was." In both Hebrew and Greek, manna means, "What is it?" I find this a humorous and very human definition. I can just imagine the children of Israel, much like I would today, saying, What is this? And how is it ever going to meet my needs?" Nevertheless, in verse 15, God answers through Moses. "And Moses said to them, 'This is the bread which the Lord has given you to eat.'" We know that manna is a type of Jesus Christ, through whom God provides eternal sustenance for all who believe. Submission to and dependence on Christ as our provision is not what the world tells us to depend on. Only by overcoming the visible, which is to say the world, which I take to include our own reasoning minds and our emotional reactions, can we begin to see and rely daily on the hidden manna that's provided for us. For the children of Israel, the manna was a tangible thing that could be seen, touched, and consumed. It made an impression, much in the same way that the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 did. So let's turn to John 6. After Jesus had fed the multitude, he and his disciples left, and eventually the crowd came looking for him. So starting in verse 26, I think, "Jesus answered them and said, 'Most assuredly, I say to you, you seek me, not because you saw the signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled. Do not labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you, because God the Father has set his seal on him.' And then they said to him, "What shall we do that we may work the works of God?" And Jesus answered and said to them, "This is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he sent." Therefore they said to him, "What sign will you perform then, that we may see it and believe you? What work will you do? Our fathers ate the manna in the desert. As it's written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat." Then Jesus said to them, "Most assuredly, I say to you, Moses did not give you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." Then they said to him, "Lord, give us this bread always." And Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst." That's perfect provision, right? And that's what I want, and you want. So he goes on in verse 47, "Most assuredly, I say to you, he who believes in me has everlasting life. I am the bread of life. Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness and are dead. This is the bread which comes down from heaven, that one may eat of it and not die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever, and the bread that I shall give is my flesh, which I shall give for the life of the world." A little bit more, we'll go into verse 56. "He who eats my flesh and drinks my blood abides in me, and I in him. As the Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so he who feeds on me will live because of me. This is the bread which came down from heaven. Not as your fathers ate the manna and are dead, he who eats this bread will live forever." I like that he understands that humans need the point made over and over and over again. When I read through this, I thought of the hymn, "More about Jesus would I know, more of Jesus would I consume and have that everlasting nourishment." In her commentary on John, Mary Bodhi reflects on this passage, and she says, "His flesh is truly food, and his blood is drink in a spiritual sense. We partake of this wondrous food by faith, and Christ's very life is thus assimilated and becomes part of ourselves, even as our natural food becomes a part of us. But contrary to the natural, we are assimilated to the food, not the food to us." So I want to conclude with three brief reflections on manna that have been on my mind lately, in the context both of the Old Testament and when we first learned about manna and its temporal provision for the children of Israel, and then there in John when we learned what manna is in the spiritual sense. So a first reflection is we have to accept the manna. We left on a high note in John 6:58, and as I was reading that, I thought, well, I thought about these people surrounding Jesus and hearing this message about what the true manna is, what the true bread of life is, and thought, well, who would not want to partake of the living bread? Who would not want to consume and cease to ever hunger or thirst? But if you continue to read on in this passage, as you know, we see that many of his disciples turned away. What Jesus was saying was at odds with the thinking of the day. The Jewish law specifically, and the cultural norms. Further, what Jesus was saying was at odds with the people's material wants and desires. They were great with the literal bread and the fishes. Everyone was full to overflowing, but walking by faith and relying on Christ as the bread of life, that was a different story, and many of them walked away and rejected that. And I think again about the church in Pergamos, and the saints there, some of whom, you know, definitely strayed to the world's thinking. But, you know, they were having to reconcile what the world was telling them about what was normal and right with the admonition to stay faithful to Christ. And that was kind of like those disciples were as well. They were negotiating, ugh, you know, Jewish law, this person's talking about eating flesh. That is against everything that we have been taught and what our culture says. And some of them ended up leaving. So I can, unfortunately, at times, if I'm honest, relate to that emotion of, really, Lord, you want me to value this when there are all these great, wonderful, pretty, successful things over here? Really? you want it the narrow way, but this way over here is broad and it's well lit and there's flowers and it seems to lead to prosperity. But the narrow way, that's a little uncertain and there's some curves in it that I can't see beyond. So that's probably what I would have been thinking if I were among the disciples. So on this point, one commentator reflected that believers today face an analogous temptation to seek temporal benefits over eternal truth, to interpret scripture through cultural lenses rather than spirit-revealed meaning, and to abandon commitment when teachings become counter-cultural. The remedy is Peter's confession, recognizing Christ as the exclusive source of life-giving words. And there in John 6:68, we read, "But Simon Peter answered him, 'Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life, and we have come to believe and know that you are the Christ, the Son of the living God.'" So we'll go along with this eating the flesh thing because we have learned to trust you, and we are choosing to believe what you say is true. A second reflection out of three. We're almost there, Graham. Second reflection. We must take the manna. So we have to accept it. We must take the manna that is consume Jesus day to day, trusting that he will provide what is needed, when it is needed, and only in the amount that's needed. He is our daily bread. So returning to Exodus 16, this time verse 15, Moses said to them, "This is the bread which the Lord has given you to eat. This is the thing which the Lord has commanded. Let every man gather it according to each one's need. One omer for each person, according to the number of persons, let every man take for those who are in his tent." Then the children of Israel did so and gathered some more, some less. So when they measured it by omers, he who gathered much had nothing left over, and he who gathered little had no lack. Every man had gathered according to each one's need. And Moses said, "Let no one leave any of it till morning." So trust that he'll provide on a daily basis that which we need, no more than no less. So a final reflection, and it's closely related to this last one. We can't hoard the manna. You knew that's where I was going. So have you ever found a great limited time product or piece of clothing that fits just right, and in response, you bought three or four times what you needed? I guess I'm the only one who's ever done that. What's motivating that? Often it's fear. What if I can't find something like this in the future? In the spiritual sense, we might think, what if God doesn't provide like this in the future? So returning to Exodus 16, verse 20, "Notwithstanding, they did not heed Moses, but some of them left part of it until morning, and it bred worms and stank." Again, this is a relatable moment from the wilderness, at least for me. We can't hoard the manna. It was a problem because it spoke of their self-reliance, their self-effort, a lack of obedience, an abundance of fear, and a lack of faith. And I certainly can do that in my own life. As a caveat, there is a different type of clinging on to manna that's something I think we should do. So I'll end here. And that is consciously reflecting on and commemorating God's provisions to us, like the golden jar of manna that was placed in the ark. By showing up with what we need day to day and moment by moment and giving us the grace to consume our daily bread, God grows us from faith to faith, as described in Romans 1. So while we can't live off the manna given to us in the past and we shouldn't hoard it, we can and should reflect on what he has provided and know that he will continue to meet those needs. So I think we'll end with a song, if our musician or musicians would come, and I would like to sing more about Jesus.